are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
And views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Well, this is going to be a good night, and for several reasons. First of all, our new computer has arrived. You are now listening via our new computer configured for us by our network. So you should be getting really good audio out of this right now. I hope so. It's also going to be a good night because my guest this evening is Richard Hoagland. And Richard Hoagland is always interesting. And we're going to be talking about some rather interesting stuff this evening. So you want to be sure, call everybody you know. Email everybody you know, tell them to tune in. If you haven't done so, go over to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down on the right-hand side, you'll see a little tiny button over there, and that little tiny button is for UpSnap. Now, if you have a cell phone, you can sign up for a free account at UpSnap and be able to listen to this show live via your telephone. So, you know, some of you have those free minutes in the evening, unlimited free minutes. Well, here's a good way to use them. And it's free. Okay, so be sure you do that. While you're there at kevinsmithshow.com, also be sure that if you have not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, that you do so. And you need to do that because, number one, it's absolutely free. There's no strings attached. And number two, it's a good e-zine. It's our free weekly newsletter. It'll come to your email once a week. And then occasionally, when we have something really special happening, we send a special notice. But other than that, that's it. And by the way, we never loan or rent or give or in any other way let someone use our mailing list. All right? So you're not going to get spammed as a result of signing up for the Kevin Smith Show newsletter called the K-Files e-zine. And it'll be going out tomorrow, so be sure that you sign up today, all right? After you sign up, you need to click on, it's going to send you an email, and it has a confirmation link. You need to click on that. And one more thing to do while you're over there, if you have not yet in March voted for our podcast, be sure you do that. Now, that's very important. We need you to do that, and many of you have already, but we need you to do that, every one of you, once a month, because it helps us to obtain and to retain the sponsors that make this show possible. So if you like the show, and you know, you've thought, well, you know, I like the show. I want to make sure it keeps going on, but I don't want to dig down in my pocket and put out any money. Okay, well, here's something you can do. It doesn't cost you anything. Just vote for our podcast, and it will help us to be able to get the sponsors and to retain the sponsors that we need to keep the show going, all right? So three things to do over at kevinsmithshow.com. You can do all three this evening, and all of them are free. You can get your free UpSnap account. You can get the K-Files e-zine subscription free, and you can vote for our podcast. All right, we are headed into a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Richard Hoagland.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to alienseekernews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph. Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion at Circuit City.
We are back, and as I stated earlier, my guest this evening is Richard Hoagland. Richard Hoagland is a former space science advisor to Walter Cronkite, director of EnterpriseMission.com, which is one of the most most visited sites on the internet. Researcher, author, public speaker, and he's appeared in many documentaries that all of you have seen on television. And in addition, I'm taking a hazardous guess at this, but I would hazard a guess that he has appeared on thousands of radio shows just like this one. Richard Hoagland, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
And I'm only 135. Good evening, Kevin.
It's good to have you back. It's been, 2 years, I think, since you were
at
here?
At least, yes. A lot of water has flown under this bridge, as my grandmother used to say.
Yes, and across the surface of Mars as well.
You know, that's what I keep hearing, and I'm surprised that NASA has taken so long to find it, given that we found it on their images many, many years ago.
We're going to get into that a little bit tonight, but the first thing that I really would like for us to tackle here, I've been telling people, you know, look, when this subject would come up, I'd say, look, we're trying to get Richard Hoagland scheduled, and we'll find out what he's got to say about this. November the 5th, 2005, the Mars Global Surveyor blinks out. It fails to phone home. And they tried all sorts of things to try and get it to phone home, and it would not. On November the 17th, 2005, they positioned the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the new super high-tech satellite that's up there.
I think you mean 2006, right?
Yeah. Have I been saying 2005?
All along. It's one of those things.
I'm only 136. 2006. So November 17th, 2006. They positioned the new high tech, super high tech Mars
20-inch telescope.
Yes, Mars.
It's kind of like a spy satellite. Of an NSA spy satellite orbiting Mars. Finally.
And when it shot photos to determine why, they wanted pictures to see if they could determine why the Mars Global Surveyor was not phoning home, the photos showed exactly why. It's not there.
Blank space, yes.
What's the deal?
Well, you know, Kevin, this is actually a more interesting story than most of the mainstream, gosh, surprise, surprise, has really honed in on. And apparently you're one of the few people. I mean, I talk to George Norrie a lot and Art, and they're not really intrigued with this because it kind of came and went, and it's old history, old news. This really is an unsung story, and maybe tonight we can resurrect it, because what you didn't see or may have missed is a little small story on space.com a few weeks ago about NASA launching an official investigation at JPL.
Yeah, I did.
To find out, well, then you know where I'm going with this, to find out what happened to Mars Surveyor. I mean, to be honest, you know, spacecraft live in a hazardous realm. They live in space. This one was designed for a couple of years. It lasted 10 years, almost 10 years to the day before it disappeared after it got to Mars. It took hundreds of thousands of pictures and all kinds of other data. It had certainly served this nation and the space agency and all the rest of us well. But its disappearance does raise some eyebrows, and mine among them, because in this space.com story, which appeared a few weeks ago, it was quietly rolled out and then went away, that JPL was going to investigate the possibility that back in the summer of 2006, months and months before the disappearance, a command computer upload had been carried out of software to basically carry on the mission in case the spacecraft couldn't phone home. And there may have been some kind of a virus or a bug in that software which basically commanded the Mars Surveyor to commit suicide.
Well, that's a heck of a virus. It ate the whole damn thing.
Well, what it did was, it as I remember, I haven't looked at the story, you know, in weeks and weeks, and when you called me and said you wanted to talk about this, I did not, frankly, have time to go and track it down. It's somewhere in my favorites file, and that file is very large, so I can't easily put my finger on it. But it went something like this. The spacecraft has to be maintained in certain attitudes toward the sun, so that it's continually charging when it's in the daylight with the solar panels, the batteries. Because if the batteries fall too low and then the spacecraft goes into the night side, you know, shadow of Mars, and it basically drains the battery like your cell phone, the spacecraft will die. It will not have enough power to do certain things to safe itself, to move certain attitude control positions and regain the sun when it comes out into the sunlight again and all that. And so the spacecraft will die from lack of electrical energy. What they think this software bug did was to command the spacecraft to go to the wrong attitude so that instead of in the safe mode, the solar panels facing the sun, they were facing away from the sun. And so the battery drained, and the spacecraft died of a lack of electrical energy, and which would basically kill it. Now, what's kind of surprising is that from the MRO reconnaissance, and there are two cameras on MRO, actually there's three, there's a super narrow field of view, you know, 20-inch telescope, which is a very high-res camera, very narrow field of view. Then there are two wider angle cameras, a context imager, and I forget what the other one is called, but it basically takes very wide pictures. They were looking for where the Mars Surveyor spacecraft would be with the wide angle telescopes so they could then, you know, hone in with the high resolution imaging system, the high rise camera.
Yeah.
And what they wanted to see was not if it was there. I mean, no one doubted it was still orbiting Mars. What they were concerned about was its attitude correct to be facing the sun? You know, the whole, is it charging for the panels, the batteries, or is there some fatal flaw? And that's when they discovered that not only didn't they see it where it should be, but there was one report I saw which claims they saw it in a somewhat different place, but they saw it in pieces, indicating it may have blown up.
Well, now, you see, that's the very first time I've heard that.
Okay, I do have the references for that.
Yeah. That would sort of make sense.
That is not evidence of foul play. It could be evidence of real stupidity because these things are very fragile. They have fuel on board, which is monomethyl hydrazine, which is what's called a hypergolic, meaning that when the two substances get together, they will burn automatically. You don't need a match. You don't need a spark plug. They just will burn. And they assume many years before, Mars Observer, Mars Surveyor's predecessor, when it disappeared in space before it got to Mars, that there was some problem in the plumbing, because these things have tanks and they have helium to pressurize the fuel so that it gets into the engine so it can, you know, combine and burn. And the presumption on Mars Observer back in 93 was that they had a literal explosion when certain valves didn't work, and this fuel that burns when it contacts its oxidizer basically got caught up behind a valve and too much accumulated, and it basically blew up. Well, no one had proposed that had happened to Mars Surveyor because the spacecraft has been well-behaved, it's been under computer control, it's been monitored closely by JPL, you know, hours and hours a day for 10 years. But if, for instance, the spacecraft battery ran down and then it rotated or it turned in space so the panels charged it in an unexpected way and the voltage conditioning system wasn't working properly because it was too cold or it didn't have proper current, you could get to a condition where the battery, in fact, could overcharge and blow up. So there are lots of things on these things that can go wrong, and after 10 years, it's not unexpected that a spacecraft will die of natural causes. I mean, these things aren't immortal. They do wear out. They have moving parts. They're electronic parts with mean, normal lifetimes. What's intriguing is the investigation quietly launched into JPL or by JPL into the possibility of a erroneous command load, a computer set of instructions set up, which had a virus which basically would tell the spacecraft to do things that would wind up killing it. Now, let me put on my conspiratorial hat, okay?
Okay.
You're waiting for me to get to that part, right?
Yeah.
It just seemed a little bit too cute that literally on the 10th anniversary, in the wake of the big announcement, Malin and company had called a press conference and had shown the National Press Corps photographs before and after of apparently, a little sliver of ice running down the center of an arroyo on Mars, dark in one picture, and then a few years later, bright as if there was a line of ice running down the center of the arroyo, which had frozen in the cold of Mars. And it was right after that announcement that suddenly they lose their entire spacecraft. The timing seemed a little bit strange to me. And also the idea that they were bringing in the resources of this new guy on the block, the new spacecraft, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has this incredible camera. I mean, if Mars Surveyor could take pictures where you would see things on the order of, several feet across, 5 feet is probably the maximum res for the camera on Mars Surveyor.
Mm-hmm.
The new spacecraft, the new kid on the block, which went into orbit around Mars last March and is now taking extremely interesting pictures, the smallest thing you can see on those pictures is 5 inches. I mean, you could see my book. If Martians are reading The Monuments of Mars, The City on the Edge of Forever, and they left it lying outside, upturned toward the spacecraft, you could literally take a picture with Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter's camera of my book lying on the surface of Mars from the orbital altitude of Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. So it seemed kind of curious that they would invoke the new spacecraft to try to find the old spacecraft. And some of us, who are engaged in this kind of let's figure out what's going on in NASA even though they won't talk to us kind mm-hmm. of thing that we do. It's kind of like Kremlin watching in the old days where we tried to figure out what was going on in the Soviet Union by, how many cars were outside the Kremlin during the May Day parade.
Uh-huh.
some of us were looking at this and saying, is this a sign that the politics of Mars Surveyor are over? And they basically killed Malin's spacecraft to make sure he can't do any more damage to NASA and to, you know, basically the truth. And the era of Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, run by a completely different group down at the University of Arizona, with their own space center, their own computers, their own ability to make images and put out amazing detail of Mars. And so we were kind of looking at a political symbology for the changing of the guard. Now, I don't want to run that too far, you know, metaphorically to a hopeless position, but that was what some of us were speculating. And again, I freely acknowledge that all of this, except for the story on space.com about the investigation, is speculation. Because frankly, the bottom line is we don't know, Kevin. And you're about the only guy I've talked to in the last several months that really seems to care. You know, well, it's gotten to the point where whatever NASA does, people just accept. For instance, to change horses radically here, the whole story around Lisa Nowak, you know, the benighted astronaut and that whole story.
Yeah.
I think that's as phony as a $3 bill. But I can't get very many takers because they still are imbued with this idea that they're NASA and we're not. And NASA can make mistakes, but it would never deliberately do things to deceive the American people. And, of course, my position is that's absolutely wrong. NASA has done that countless times, and we've caught them at it many, many, many times.
Well, one of the things about this Mars Global Surveyor that really got my attention, I thought, oh, gee, that's bad news, you know, when I first heard about it.
Yep.
I didn't really bite into this until the stories disappeared about the NRO, the Reconnaissance Orbiter,
taking
photographs, and there were only a couple of stories back at the time when this happened.
And you didn't see the one about the pieces.
I didn't see that one. And,
let me try to track that down after the show, and I'll send you the link, because that was very interesting, because it would imply that it blew up or got hit. Now, the odds of it getting hit by something are so infinitesimal. We had a spacecraft back when I was with CBS, you know, working on the Cronkite, you know, crew.
Mm-hmm.
We had covered the landing of Apollo 11, and then they had moved us from Downey, where the spacecraft had been built. The Apollo Command and Service modules had been built by North American Rockwell at that time in Downey, California, which is one of the suburbs of Los Angeles. They then moved us from there, which was our headquarters for covering the lunar landings, up to JPL in Pasadena, which is up against the mountains. And the reason, of course, was that not only was this a kind of another space center, but it was another space story. There were two unmanned spacecraft the same summer that we landed on the moon headed to fly by Mars, Mariner 6 and Mariner 7. And during the encounter of Mariner, I'm trying to think which one came first, because they would launch them in sequence, but they would kind of outrun each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one got there first, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think 7 got to Mars first and flew by successfully a couple of weeks after the lunar landing. And then a week later, or a few days later, the second spacecraft would fly by. And we had just covered this successful first flyby when we got word in a coffee shop, of all things, in the middle of the afternoon, that NASA had lost contact with the second spacecraft, Mariner 6. And we rushed back to the lab and, you know, asked scientists and engineers what was going on and started looking at printouts and, you know, waiting for news and waiting for briefings. And eventually they got control back, or they got contact and then control, and they never did totally figure out what happened, but it had gone on a kind of a walkabout. It had gone, so it began to spin slowly in space,
mm-hmm.
and it moved its antenna, this beamed antenna, like all communication satellites that you know, we're being heard right now. If people are listening to us not over the internet, but over a radio station, that link is probably coming via satellite.
Yes.
And there's a big satellite in space, geosynchronous orbit, 22,000 miles out, with a big dish antenna aimed down toward the Earth. There's a smaller dish antenna at the radio station aimed up towards space, which is receiving the signal, then the signal goes into the radio station and you get to hear it. Well, the spacecraft going to Mars all have these dish antennas because you have to focus, like a searchlight beam, the radio signal in a certain direction in space, otherwise we wouldn't hear anything. The distances are too vast and the radio energy too weak. I mean, we're talking about transmitting energy from Mars on the electrical equivalent of a 20-watt refrigerator bulb, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
That's how little electrical energy it takes to send images back from Mars because of the technology and masers and huge antennas. Well, anyway, something had disturbed the Mariner 6 spacecraft as it was closing in on Mars that afternoon in the waning weeks of August to 69, and had knocked it out of alignment, so it was now spinning lazily in space, sweeping the beam across the Earth, then off the Earth, then on the Earth, then off, and it took them days to reestablish contact and to get the spacecraft to stabilize, to steady down. You know, they had to command it to fire jets and, you know, basically send radio signals in the blind, hoping it would pick up those signals from Earth on its Omni antennas, these little antennas on the spacecraft that can hear signals coming from any direction, and they were successful in doing all that. Well, ultimately, the theory was that one of the batteries had burst because of overcharging, the scenario I spoke about a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been that burst battery, you know, remember, in Newton's third law, every action involves an equal and opposite reaction.
Right.
So if you burst a cell in a battery in space, in weightless space, it will basically cause a little jet, just like a little rocket, briefly. And that will in turn impart momentum to the spacecraft, so it will basically change the attitude. It'll cause it to begin to slowly tumble or spin. That's what might have happened to Mars Surveyor. So that's why they were looking to see if, in fact, they could still find it with the MRO camera, which would tell them its condition. Because if they took several pictures and they saw it slowly tumbling, they would then know that its antenna was not pointed at the Earth like it should be, and they would send commands in the blind to switch to the Omni antennas. They would send more commands, and they could slowly regain control like they had done, you know, decades before with Mariner 6. Well,
Richard, we have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue. I think the MGS disappearance smells a little fishier than the batteries burst, but I'll tell you why when we come back. All right, folks, more with Richard Hoagland in a moment.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion at Circuit City.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
We are back, and my guest this evening is Richard C. Hoagland. And we're talking at the moment about Mars Global Surveyor.
Richard, I just mentioned that I didn't in the beginning, but I just mentioned your middle initial and only found out today that there is an American ambassador, Richard E. Hoagland.
Yes. No relation.
No relation. Well, now, on Mars Global Surveyor, the thing about Mars Global Surveyor that I said I think it's a little more fishy is that two little reports about the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter aiming its cameras and taking pictures and seeing nothing out there, and then you have found one that says they think they may have seen some debris. Now, go to Google.
Yeah, I think that was from Leonard David, who was the chief space reporter at space.com, and I will go back and check my archives and send you the link, because it was very interesting, because that, of course, would imply that something catastrophic happened, and there really is no, you know, meteor explanation. It would have to be some internal explosion, and again, it could be commanded by the computer. If you want to deep six a mission for some reason in an environment where nobody is expecting terrorism, because who the heck cares about spacecraft orbiting other planets? I mean, that's not where, you know, the Islamic fanatics are aiming their guns, right?
Right.
It is duck soup to pull this off, because no one is going to ask any questions. Everyone will assume automatically, you know, it's kind of the default position. Oh, it was an accident. It was an engineering faux pas. It was its time. It basically died because of old age. No one is going to go down the route of deliberate sabotage, as we've had several other missions that have not arrived safely and have. You remember, Mars eats spacecraft. Mars is very hard on spacecraft. Something like half of all missions sent by both the U.S. and the former Soviet Union, and now Russia, when they get to Mars, they disappear. In fact, I remember wandering down the halls of JPL one day, and I saw a blackboard where they had this Mariner 6 scenario of what had happened to it as kind of a retro-engineering, because NASA used to be very good at trying to figure out what happened so they could prevent it from happening in the future, which, of course, any good engineering organization would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing on this blackboard, remember back in those days there were blackboards, Kevin?
Yeah, I remember.
I remember seeing a whole list of possible failure modes and something at the very top called the GGG. So being young and naive, even though I did represent CBS and Cronkite, I asked the nearest engineer, okay, I understand, you know, batteries, I understand attitude control, you know, system failure, I understand, what's the GGG? And he looked at me with a perfectly straight face and he says, oh, that's the Great Galactic Ghoul.
Well, the GGG got into the G, the Google.
Yeah.
Because these two reports vanished. You can't find them. They're not there. And you know, that when you take news out of circulation, you take news, especially a spacecraft that has been so successful for almost 10 years. It was only 2 days shy of its birthday.
Yeah, it was literally 2 days shy of its 10th anniversary.
Yeah,
which and is a big deal. I mean,
it's a big deal, and it just disappeared. And now on the 17th, you have two reports that show up that talk about the pictures not showing it being where it should be, and then bam, they disappear, and no more talk about it. Now that screams problems.
Now, you're telling me the stories themselves have disappeared off the net?
Yes.
Okay, because I haven't assiduously followed up because, I mean, part of me says it, I mean, back up a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Why would anybody care?
That's the question.
So there's a spacecraft orbiting Mars, which has been there for 10 years. Why would someone kill it? All right, to use our worst conspiratorial slant on this. And then why would someone hide the fact that they killed it? It's like, who cares? The reason being, we have an incredibly more capable and able mission in orbit around Mars right now where I am focusing all my attention, which is the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. Because if we are going to be able to do what I'm hoping I can talk to your audience tonight about doing, and marshal broad public support with faxes and emails to NASA and to the key members of the congressional committees to get the kind of synoptic coverage with this new technology that we should have of the artifacts we know are on Mars, the artificial things, the ruins, the ancient debris of some incredible civilization now sitting there amid those rusted, drifting sands, then this fight is over. And on its best day, Mars Surveyor could not give us that kind of smoking gun evidence. Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter can. 5 feet does not compare to 5 inches. Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter is the one they should have killed, not Mars Surveyor. They could have gone on taking pictures for the next 20 years, Kevin, and no one would have cared because it's not definitive enough to solve the problem with the critics, oh, you don't have enough extraordinary evidence. So it makes no sense politically. That's why it really is a bizarre tale, and my instinct says, you know, it probably just died, but these stories that came out about it in pieces indicates it died violently. That doesn't make sense. The anniversary timing also doesn't make sense. I mean, I think we're kind of overkilling this one story because there is no answer yet, and there's no way I can know to get an answer. What I would prefer to do, frankly, is to focus our political attention and the limited time of your audience on what we can do with this mission, which is alive and well and in orbit, MRO, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has the cannon on board. It's got that incredible camera, a 20-inch telescope and a state-of-the-art CCD camera that if they, we can politically demand they focus on Cydonia, focus on the D&M pyramid, focus on the pyramids, focus on the face, focus on the glass tunnels, focus on the... I mean, I found an ocean liner on Mars.
What?
Ancient ocean liner, yes.
That's it's one on... I haven't heard about. That. And I follow your site pretty close. I haven't heard about that one.
Well, I don't think I put it on Enterprise yet. I think I put it in the Enterprise conference because we have a subscription conference of people that are kind of like our think tank. And I think I rewarded them for their, you know, few bucks a year by giving them an exclusive for a few weeks to kind of look at this. But we've got... Again, a picture taken by Mars Global Surveyor, but it's at the threshold of definability. If you know what you're looking at, there's no doubt it's an ocean liner. In fact, I kind of played a little joke on George Norrie one night. I, you know, had talked about this on the air, and he was, oh, come on, you've got to be, you know, you're nuts. There's no ocean liners on Mars? So I sent him the picture. To his credit, he goes on the air, and he says, damn it, if... When Dick sent me the picture, it looks like an ocean liner. Now, that's because George knows me, and he knows my credibility, and he knows that I wouldn't, you know, pull his leg. For most people, they will have to see much better data. As if we had taken pictures with Surveyor of this thing for the next 10 years, as I just said, there'd be no definitive data. We need to take pictures of this thing, this ocean liner, sitting there in the sands, looking kind of like, remember the opening scenes in Close Encounters? Where
yeah.
they find the ocean liner in the desert,
yeah,
and the guy in the sandstorm, who says the sun came out and sang, and mm-hmm. he's all sunburned on one side.
Yeah.
We've got that kind of thing: an ocean liner sitting in the deserts of Mars, which of course raises all kinds of extraordinary questions. How did it get there? Where is the ocean now? Where is the civilization that built it? Because I'm obviously not claiming it came from another planet. I'm claiming it's part of the Martian architecture. It's part of the Martian civilization, the ruins that have been left in the wake of this enormous catastrophe that happened to Mars millions of years ago. Well, it will take the 5-inch resolution of MRO to definitively give you and me and everybody else listening and saying, oh, my God, the smoking gun photographic evidence. So if you wanted to kill a spacecraft that could basically, you know, tell everybody that the game is up, that there really are ruins on Mars, it wasn't Mars Surveyor they should have targeted. They should have targeted MRO. So my problem with this is political and logic. It like makes no sense to take out a spacecraft that's not going to do you in and leave one that can do you in perfectly alive and well and taking lots and lots of incredible pictures. I mean, on the first images from MRO, which are on the Enterprise website, just do a search on MRO and Enterprise, and it will take you right to the images when you do Google searches.
Uh-huh.
We've got incredible comparisons of ruins in the Mideast, in Iran, side by side with the first images after they went into orbit back in March from MRO, that look identical. If I hadn't captioned each one, which what it is, you could not tell which pictures were taken on Earth of real ruins that we know are ruins because people have been there. You know, they've kicked the tires. They've actually turned over the dirt. They've looked at the stones. They've looked at the walls. They've looked at the ruins on the ground. You could not tell those apart in these images from the stuff that they gave us back in March from the first orbital surveys from MRO. And that was when the spacecraft was 10 times higher, meaning the pictures were 10 times poorer than they are now.
Okay, now, the MRO, I'm willing to not fish that story much more, but at this point, just one more thing, an exclamation point.
Say your final statement, and then I'll tell you my final thoughts on that.
Why are the stories missing?
That's an excellent question. Unless there is such an infight going on, such an internal war in NASA, like there's an internal war in the White House over the war over Iraq, you know, the whole Libby thing, the Cheney mm-hmm. thing. I mean, this entire administration and its control on the federal government is falling apart. In every direction, it's falling apart. If there was skullduggery, if there is an in-crowd and an out-crowd, and the out-crowd in this case won and basically killed the bad guy's spacecraft so the good guys can have their day, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
you still wouldn't want that out in public. You still would not want any enterprising reporter, hint, hint, Kevin, to fish around that story and begin to connect dots. You wouldn't want to have links. You wouldn't want to have references. You wouldn't have what we used to call a paper trail, which is now an electron trail. So making the story goes away basically erases it, you know, from human memory. It's the old joke I used to say back when I was advising CNN. You know, if a tree falls in the forest and CNN isn't there with a camera, did it really fall? If those stories are missing, it means someone doesn't want us to think about spacecraft that go away mysteriously orbiting Mars because they don't want us to think about the internal war between factions that are trying to get to be top dog as to who will control the truth of what's on Mars. So in a weird kind of way, your suspicion makes sense, but it only makes sense if our side, and by our side I mean the guys that are wanting to get the real story out, are on the verge maybe of winning.
Well, and I think that's true because just consider that last batch of pictures. And NASA finally caught up with Hoagland and said, by golly, there's water on the surface.
You know, that is so amusing if it weren't tragic. I mean, the American taxpayers have spent literally billions of dollars on the space program, hundreds of billions of dollars. And What I'm really upset about and disappointed is that most Americans don't know what their tax dollars have wrought. They have no idea the wonders that NASA has recorded and stored in archives that unless politically we get the right revolution, we're never going to get to see. And I've been fighting this fight now, Kevin, as you know, for over 25 years. If anybody had told me a quarter century ago when I first tripped over the face on Mars and DiPietro and Molinar's images and thought, you know, very naively that I could maybe, you know, bring the light of day to this problem and get real scientists to be interested in an extraordinary real issue.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't get the right political action among ordinary taxpaying Americans, that day is never going to come. And I say that after spending 25 years on this search. We've got tons of data, but most people won't believe the data because an authority figure sitting at a NASA press conference with a big, you know, NASA meatball on the wall behind them has not formally looked into a TV camera and said, my fellow Americans, there are ruins on Mars. Or the Apollo astronauts saw ruins on the moon, which they did. There's so much lie and chicanery going on around the NASA program that it is hard in even 2 hours to know where to begin, to pull the threads out of this shawl to where the whole thing unravels.
What do you think the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter will show us? Now, we have to go to a break. When we come back, do you think it's going to settle the whole issue of those are artificial ruins? We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll get that question answered by Richard Hoagland. We'll be back.
Just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here, and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion at Circuit City.
Somebody's been lying.
And we are back. My guest this evening is Richard Hoagland. Richard, before we went to break, I asked the question. Once we have all this flood of pictures coming back from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, like the MGS did for so many years, do you think it's finally going to settle the debate? Are we really going to know, yes or no, if we have artifacts up there that are artificial?
Well, you know, I saw a photograph taken by MRO the other day. It was a month or two ago. And it was a photograph taken from its 190, 180-mile orbit, looking straight down on a crater that one of the rovers, the Odyssey rover, had traveled south from its landing site on Mars over the period of a year or two to reach, called Victoria Crater. And this rover, you know, which is taking these amazing pictures on the ground, panoramas, you know, color and all that, was perched on the rim of this, it's about the same size crater as the Barringer Meteor Crater in Arizona, mm-hmm. almost a mile across and hundreds of feet deep with sculpted sides and red cliffs and really, really strikingly awesome. And the MRO had looked down from orbit and had taken a picture of Odyssey sitting on the rim of Victoria Crater. And in the wide angle, it looked like just this little dot, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you zoomed in, and you could actually see, because it was a late afternoon shot. You know, late afternoon on Mars, like late afternoon on the Earth, you get long shadows, right?
Right.
Well, the rover spacecraft, the two rovers, Spirit and Odyssey, Opportunity,
uh-huh.
have an omni antenna on top of a, looks like an old-fashioned stovepipe. All right, that sticks up like 3 feet above the spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
The MRO picture was able to see the shadow of this 3-foot antenna against the desert in the afternoon Martian sun.
Well, I have no doubt that it has the technology to be able to give us very detailed pictures. But my question is, do you think we'll get to see them?
Well, that's a political question.
Right.
That is totally dependent on us and on the opposition of NASA and the people that run NASA. Because remember, these decisions on censorship, keeping the American people in the world from knowing that we've discovered the ruins of an ancient civilization in the solar system millions of years old and we discovered it, you know, decades ago, that is a conscious political decision that we have no need to know. That we are basically chattel. Our tax dollars mean nothing except to fuel their agenda on their timetable, and we don't count. You know, they don't give a damn about our interests or our concerns or the fact that this actually would make for a better world. This is information that they deem that we are not ready to know, so they don't want to tell us. Now, is that an impermeable wall? Is that the old Berlin Wall, to use an interesting metaphor? Well, back when I was growing up, the Cold War was everything, right, Kevin?
Yeah, that's true.
It was the 70-foot giant. It was the, you know, the Paul Bunyan of geopolitics. The Soviet Union was the big bad bear. They had 50,000 plus nuclear warheads. We were, you know, ducking and covering under our desks in the 50s, and the first hints of what could happen if we had an all-out thermonuclear exchange. And then what happened? In 1989, suddenly, without firing a shot, this huge colossus, this mega monster, the old bugaboo, the Soviet Union, fell without firing a shot. The wall came down. There's pictures of people taking away pieces of that wall as souvenirs. In fact, I think some people bought pieces of it, and it's been erected in New York City. There's a place in New York City where you can go and actually see a couple of pieces standing of the old Berlin Wall, and complete with graffiti, because time has changed. Politics is ultimately, even in the most tyrannical, oppressive dictatorship and tyranny, ultimately it depends on what the people want. Do they get mad enough? Do they get angry enough? Do they get fed up enough? Do they demand, through all the mechanisms under their control, that the truth finally come out? And the problem, Kevin, is people on the NASA problem have not gotten mad enough to demand the truth. our job, as I see it now, is not just the science. I mean, the science we've been trying to do to the best of our ability and our colleagues' ability for years and years, but really our main problem has been to excite politically enough people to realize what has been stolen from them, what extraordinary world they would live in if this was common knowledge, if the engineering and the science and the extraordinary, you know, background of whoever the Martians were, whoever built the stunning glass ruins on the moon, if all of that was part of public domain, if all of that was available on Google or Lexis or, you know, the Internet for search because of expeditions and dollars we've paid and blood and treasure we have paid in terms of astronauts who have died for the space program, if all of that actually had resulted in everybody knowing what is out there waiting for us to figure it out and how to put it to use for the betterment of all mankind, this planet tonight would be an extraordinarily different world than the incredibly harrowing planet on which we live, where we literally are worried about Iran having the bomb and what Islamic fascists is going to come and try to kill us in our beds and what airliner can't you get on now because, I don't know whether you heard the story that George ran last night, there's a serious discussion that maybe Boeing isn't putting explosives on big aircraft so that Homeland Security can bring them down in the event that they are invaded and attacked and taken over by hijackers. I mean, we live on an awful place. Mainly, I believe, because all the good stuff has been kept from us that would change this world from the harrowing nightmare it has become into the garden it could have been if knowledge had been freely available through the NASA program.
Yeah, you know, actually, living on this planet is something like the movie Escape from New York.
Yeah, or L.A.
Yeah,
that, you know, one of those two sequels.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, and it doesn't have to be that way. It didn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. I am becoming more convinced that John Kennedy gave his life in an effort to stem that tide, that that's the real reason for John Kennedy's assassination, that he was about to come out with some information basically about what's out there, and that is why they killed him, having nothing to do with the mob and the mafia and Castro and all the other red herrings we've been led to believe. And, you know, I'm going to be putting some of this in a new book that I'm working on. And when we get to the point where the book is appropriate to talk about, I will obviously come back on your show and we'll talk about it. But we've got some really interesting new evidence that John Kennedy was about to spill the beans on the big picture, the kind of world in which we should be living, not the world in which we've been condemned to live. And that incredible historical fork in the road has taken us further and further and further in directions that human beings and republics and democracies never, ever want to go.
We are just seconds away from a break, but let me ask this. When this comes out in your new book, do you think it's something Oliver Stone will look at?
Possibly. We've got a number of conversations going in Hollywood, not just with Stone, but with some other very fine producers. And see, I see another trend curve, you know, and when we come back after the break, I want to talk a bit about the physics that we have learned from our experiences looking at these ruins, because we'll also come back to what it is that MRO can actually take pictures of if we're allowed to see them that will make all the difference, because those are very important technical testable questions. What could we see that would convince ordinary people, not people that maybe follow you or follow me or, you know, listen to Coast or whatever, but just average middle Americans who pay their tax dollars and expect, you know, government to give them a fair break and treat them honestly and give them the truth. What will those people get to see that will make them say, oh my God, there was an ancient civilization in the solar system?
All right. We will be back in just a couple of minutes, about 3 minutes or so. And we're going to open up the telephone line so that you can call in and talk with Richard Hoagland yourself. The telephone number, toll-free throughout North America, is 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. And please, if you call, focus on talking with Richard Hoagland. And I know some of you are experiencing some technical difficulties. not being caused by this computer, I assure you. And we don't need to hear about those. We need to hear about space, okay?
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
10, 9.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring 5 of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here, and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion at Circuit City.
The centuries, the simple truth that passes by, despite the proof, perspective, and perception, and the art of self-deception. From Galilee to Galileo, center of the wheel. Turn your eyes to starry skies and tell me what you feel.
Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And, man, you have missed a great first hour. But we're going now to have a great second hour, and it's even better now that you're here. Our telephone number is 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout North America, from the very tip-top of Canada to the very bottom tip of Florida. Toll-free, 1-800-289-1092. And my guest is Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, when the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter begins, I know it's already sending back pictures, but when it begins to send them back, just stream after stream after stream after stream, and we get to the point where it's like the Mars Global Surveyor was, there's just hundreds of thousands of pictures. What do you suspect we're going to find?
Well, if the pictures aren't altered, if they're not tricked, if they're not, you know, if something doesn't happen to them in a computer to where, you know, with Photoshop now, you can't trust any image. It becomes very difficult, and you need real expertise to figure out, you know, fakes from real data anymore, which, of course, is played into the hands of people that want to keep us in this limbo of ambiguity. So that ultimately, no matter what you present as pictorial evidence, people will, you know, stand up and say, you did that in Photoshop. That's why you have to have an ironclad paper trail back to the original sources, and why it's interesting that the MRO people, the high-rise people, the high-rise being the name of the actual camera for high resolution, have set up a public website through the Ames Research Center, the NASA Ames Research Center, where people, ordinary people, citizens, taxpayers, can actually submit requests for targeting of various objects on Mars. And other missions, the Mars Surveyor mission did that late in the mission, you know, like after the first 8 or some years, Malin finally opened up his process to where he would let people, you know, they call it public request images.
Yes.
But many times, I mean, I know people that are part of our Enterprise Associate group who have actually gone through that bureaucratic process and submitted electronically requests for retargeting of certain things on Mars, and the pictures were not taken, the pictures were taken wrong, they had the wrong filters, they came back gray, I mean, all kinds of weird things happened. And again, you know, when you try to document this, it's you run into this bureaucratic nightmare that, you know, who is responsible? Who is accountable? Where does the buck stop? Because you're dealing with this vast bureaucracy that NASA has in place and has had in place for literally decades, which has a lot more money to spend than the average American who's trying to get a picture of real Martian ruins. Well, when they set up the infrastructure around high-rise and MRO, they did something pretty interesting, which is what gave me hope that maybe we were seeing a new broom. They set up a system at NASA Ames where you can publicly get in line and specify the area on Mars that you want new pictures or pictures taken of. And they have all kinds of helps on the website that will allow people that don't really know anything about spacecraft or even know anything about computers, with the help of somebody who does, because who doesn't have, you know, a friendly nerd hanging around that knows computers these days, can help you actually make out a request form and submit it that will maybe someday get your picture of Mars taken. Well, what I want to do, with the help of your show and Coast and other media outlets that I frequent regularly, I want to organize a national campaign of interested citizens who have paid with their DAX dollars for this mission, and I want to make a priority list of the key things which, if those pictures were taken by MRO, they were honestly taken, they would definitively, once and for all, remove all doubt that there is this extraordinary ancient civilization lying in ruins under and on the sands of Mars. And the politics of how we get from here to there is what is going to be difficult and challenging, but in the end, definitely worthwhile.
Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, please, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don.
Yes.
I'm from Phoenix.
Yes.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
Outstanding. How are you, Don?
Pretty good. How you doing, Richard?
Don, can you speak up a little bit? I can almost not hear you.
Okay, sure.
That's better.
Yeah, I'd like to make a couple comments, if I may, and a little bit of speculation. Okay. And you were mentioning about it's up to us, the public, to come forward and demand the truth from the government. But my speculation is that if the government really even knows what's going on. I feel that there are societies embedded within the government that controls all this. And if they release information about the Mars situation, then they're also admitting to the lies they've been covering up about the UFOs. And my understanding, and Kevin has had a couple guests on that claims that NASA is nothing more than a decoy anyways, and covering up for another space agency that we have, and we're already going to Mars and the Moon, and there's even people who's came forward who's worked within NASA and said there's airbrushing going on. So if we do get photos, how do we know we're even getting the truth? There's so much...
Kevin, you've got a really sharp audience.
Oh, yes.
First question out of the box. Excellent question, Don. Let me try to address these because they're all important. You know, it's a multi-part question and they're all important. If we have the mindset going in that nothing will ever change, then I might as well go back to having dinner, and Kevin could go out, you know, and hang storm windows, and you could go back to whatever you do in Phoenix, and we don't have to have the conversation. I'm starting with the premise that we still do have a republic, that even if there is an invisible government, they only can operate in the shadows and in the dark with most people not knowing they exist. The fact is that these assets that are orbiting Mars and orbiting the Moon are assets that you and I paid for. You know, they are trackable tax dollars. There's real hardware. There's real contractors. There's real people in the everyday world, in the so-called white world, that have done all this. If there are invisible people hiding behind the doors telling them what to do, they're not telling all of them what to do, because that never works. If everybody knew there was an invisible control, it wouldn't be invisible. The only way the control works is because it's invisible. It's only a few at the top. So by making a huge public effort at the bottom, at the grassroots, and getting the honest people in the system, within NASA, within the space agency, within the contractors, within Lockheed Martin and the other people that have built these spacecraft, to get them to ask the questions, at some point you will come to a fork in the road where honest people inside the system that want to know as much as we do will be told they can't know. And at that point, the revolution begins. Because the only way this invisible government nonsense continues to work is that it's invisible. What our job has to be, in part, is to make it visible, to show people who don't believe in conspiracies, who don't believe in censorship, who don't believe the, you know, invisible hand of the Illuminati, whatever you want to call it, is actually running the show. We have to show those people that, yes, there are forces at work that are extra-constitutional, that are above your pay grade, that you're not even allowed to know exist, and they are dictating policy. Once we get to that magic tipping point where people in the system realize they have been had, things will begin to change very rapidly. I mean, look at the situation with the Iraq War. Now, I'm not going to get in tonight to, is it right, is it wrong, did we get in for the right reasons, wrong reasons? That's not my issue. My issue here is nothing has changed for 6 years until the American people got fed up. And then today we have one of the parties basically setting a timetable for getting out. The reason? 70% of the American people say it's time to get out. And no matter who's sitting in the White House, you know, King George or whatever, the fact is that this guy alone cannot stand against the will of the American people if the American people exercise their will. We have to exercise our will. We can't allow people to wave their arms and say, oh, there's invisible voodoo dolls controlling everything. You're powerless. That's what they want you to think. They want you to think you have no power. Actually, they're afraid of you. If enough of you and we get together, we can get pictures of what's on Mars and change the history of the world. It's really that simple.
I 100% agree with you, Richard. It's just that I think the powers to be, the powers that are, when we talk about government, I spoke about this the other night. I think we use the word
government. Yeah, but you have to ask yourself, how do they exercise power? Power has specific channels. It isn't an amorphous thing. If you have elected officials, politicians, how are they controlled invisibly behind the scenes? Obviously,
I think the elected officials don't know themselves what's going on.
That's why we have to push it to where they are ultimately confronted. I mean, there was one elected official who did find out in a very, very unfortunate circumstance. Years ago, I asked for and got a meeting with the chairman of the House Science Committee. I'm trying to remember his name right now. It's been so many years. And I did it with a little fancy political footwork. I basically sent a videotape of one of my NASA briefings on Cydonia. And he thought it was a really cool idea, and he invited me and some of my colleagues in. and we had an incredible meeting, and I told him what we needed with the upcoming missions, and he went on record saying that as chairman, we would get it. He went on the air, he went on radio and television talking about the fact that I'd shown him possible ruin. This is all in my book, by the way, The Monuments of Mars, The City on the Edge of Forever. He, within a year, was fired. Within another few months, he quit the house, went back to New York, to his home district, I think it was New York, and then a couple years later, I saw a news story where he had been arrested for drunk driving and almost killing a young woman and her daughter in a van in the middle of the night. This was the most powerful chairman of science on the planet. And because he stepped into the whole Cydonia issue and tried to do the right thing, he was fired and made a non-person, and he became an alcoholic because the thrust of power of the invisible whatever it is that runs these guys' lives came up and dealt him a cruel blow. Well, that's because he was blindsided. He didn't know he wasn't the most powerful guy in that chair. He thought he had power. In fact, it turned out he didn't.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, but because he was one person, Don. He was one person, and politically we didn't give him any air cover. The fact is, with programs like Coast and programs like Kevin's and the television things that we're doing and the Hollywood things we're doing, this is a totally different era than when this all went down 20-some years ago. This is not the time to roll over and play dead. This is the time to rise up and demand our rights under the Constitution, because we got the wind at our back. If you look at what's going on mainstream television, look at what's going on in the House, in the Senate, at the White House level, with Iraq, with this coming election, there are winds of change blowing in this country. And we need to be part of that change and demand that all of the information which can change the plight of mankind to one from hopelessness to one of hope be put on the table. Because I'm telling you, if we had 1/1000th of the information in those ruins at our fingertips tonight, we wouldn't be facing global warming issues. We wouldn't be having a problem with buying, you know, a tank of gas for $5. We wouldn't be having problems with feeding people or keeping people alive. We would have a science that would be adequate to the problems we are confronting, and someone has not wanted us to have those solutions, and it's time it stop.
All right, Don, thank you for the call. Excellent questions, excellent points. I want to clarify something for the audience, because I normally say, in fact, I say all the time, that we don't get into politics here. And but this is not the type of politics that I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the Democrats are great, or the Republicans are great, or the Democrats are rotten, or the Republicans are rotten. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, that we don't get into that partisan politics stuff. But in our daily life here in the United States of America, and it is so in a lot of the other countries that are listening to us tonight as well. Just to be a citizen means that you do have some civil responsibilities that have to do with politics. For instance, writing your senator, writing your representative, expressing your opinion, getting groups together, and as a group, sending a communication, that sort of thing. That's how democracy works, and it won't work any other way. Without
Kevin,
the citizens, it becomes a tyranny.
Let me add something to that. You know, people have this, again, impression, carefully inculcated from the other side, the side that doesn't want us to know anything. You know, what's the quickest way to win a war? The quickest way is not to kill your enemy. It's to make your enemy lay down their arms and quit. And the enemy we face has tried to get all of us trying to find out what's going on out there, the real data in the solar system, to give up and quit before we have really, you know, tested our mettle against whatever forces they can bring to bear to keep us in the dark. Many years ago, it probably is now about a decade, you know, from the time Mars Surveyor went into orbit, I mounted a campaign using, you know, the good offices of Premier and the Coast to Coast Network with the help of my friend Art Bell. And we demanded, we sent faxes, tens of thousands of faxes, into the headquarters of NASA in Washington, D.C. We papered the floor with faxes. I had people reporting to me, you know, how much paper came in and how many faxes and how many machines ran out and all that. Well, that changed politically the tide in Washington. The administrator, Dan Golden, actually countermanded Malin, Dr. Malin, who controlled the camera, and demanded that Malin take pictures of the Sidonia ruins. Now, what they did was a very clever disinformation job after they took those pictures. But they have taken more pictures at our behest of Sidonia with that technology than in any other site on Mars, Kevin, bar none. And some of them they kept in the drawer for 6 months, a year and a half, until we did other political things, like going to John McCain's backyard in Phoenix, in Scottsdale, and literally having a meeting and inviting his staff members. And, of course, Malin's company were so afraid of what we would get John McCain to do as chairman of the NASA committee back then when the Republicans were in the majority, that he suddenly released something like 25,000 images.
I remember when that happened.
Of Mars he had been keeping in a drawer for a year and a half against the legal contract that he had signed with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So we have won over and over again. So why isn't it common knowledge that there are ruins on Mars tonight and there are ruins on the moon? The answer has to do with human nature. We are a culture, for some reason, that does not want to think for ourselves. We want an authority figure to tell us the truth. And most people in this country tonight, even though there are pictures all over the internet, on the Enterprise website, on the Coast site, on all kinds of other anomaly sites showing ruins on the moon and Mars, they will not believe that NASA has lied to them until some authority figure, some politician, some court, some administrator says, oh my God, we found an ET civilization and we just didn't get around to telling you. And that's what has to change. Because politically, we have won. We have got the data out there. There is so much available data now on what's on the moon, which is available on official NASA websites. All you have to do is download these incredible 16-megabyte files and look at them with your computer and know how to look, what you're looking for, and there is overwhelming evidence that there are ancient, incredible glass structures on the moon that the astronauts walked around under and landed down through and came back up through. But you're not going to get the average American to believe it because he doesn't trust himself. He has been misled to feel that you have to be an expert. You have to be some kind of genius to figure this out, and you can't do it by yourself. Well, yes, you can. It's called thinking. Everybody's got, within the sound of my voice now, probably a computer. They've got access to the net. They have more data at their fingertips than all the previous generations of humankind combined have. And yet, are they using it? Are they using it to the best of its ability? Are they using it to open up the system? No, they're waiting for an authority figure to come on the air, to come on television, to come on the internet, to open up a website with the big banner of NASA and say, oh, we're sorry, we lied. Well, it ain't going to happen that way. The revolution is already amongst us. It's already ongoing. The data is out there. You just have to know where to look, and that's part of what we're doing now. I'm going to be putting up on the Enterprise website links to where this data is available because it's official NASA sources. And you know, Kevin, I'm beginning to think that maybe it's insiders that have actually broken the dam, that they have been so sick and tired of all the lies for so many years, they just decided to put these pictures on the websites and you know, damn the torpedoes. So,
well,
yeah,
you know, you wrote about this, and I mentioned this, as a matter of fact, I mentioned this, I think it was last night. I couldn't remember the two different factions, the Roosters and...
Oh, the Owls and the Roosters.
The Owls and the Roosters. Yeah,
yeah,
you
we
wrote about
that
this.
We borrowed that from Chris Carter.
Yeah.
You know, who is an insider's insider. I mean, two genius series, X-Files and Millennium. Talk about telling the truth and telling it slant. But, yeah, in his Millennium series, which, remember, was the build-up to Y2K,
yeah.
He had two factions, one the Owls, who wanted to basically hide everything, and the other roosters wanted to crow about it, wanted to let it hang out. And that's basically what I think we're dealing with. We're dealing with two factions that are at war with each other. And frankly, I think, you know, if you wanted to wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning and ask me, you know, with sodium pentothal, what I think happened to Mars Surveyor, I think it was a casualty of the war between the owls and the roosters. And whether it was the owls taking out the rooster spacecraft or vice versa, I don't know. But I think we're seeing the tip of the iceberg. It's kind of like, you know, when you were kids and you would have a pillow fight and your mom would come in and all she could see, you know, was the blankets, you know, bumping up and down on the bed. She couldn't see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing these hints of this internal conflict between suppression and freedom. And we don't get to see who the players are. We rarely get to see a chain of evidence that tells us what each individual event means. So I'm telling Don, and I'm telling everybody else, that it's time to get over the, oh, poor us, we're so powerless, and they're so powerful, and they run the government, and they're running everything. I can't say the word that I just was thinking of on the air. Okay? But you're all thinking it. That is a bunch of you-know-what. We simply have to, enough of us have to demand the truth, and we'll get it as we got it with the pictures that were taken of Sidonia in 1988, I believe, when or 86, I forget the first time that they got there. I think it was 86. And they put out the pictures, and then they spun them politically. They put the wrong filters, they put them with the wrong lighting and all that, and that great geologist, Dan Rather, made the solemn pronouncement that he couldn't see a face. Well, they did that to spin the politicians and the pundits and the media people, because they know that you listen to them as harbingers of truth. If people had just looked at those pictures and realized what they were seeing, then they wouldn't have been victim to those head games. But as
well,
long
I think,
as we're dependent,
Mr. Rather, as a pillar of truth, I think has pretty much that's been discredited. We have to take a break.
I don't think Dan was in on it. I think he was a victim as much as anybody else, because he was a victim of his own arrogance.
Well, that could be. That could be. And as a matter of fact, I would buy that. We have to take a break. Caller, if you will just hang on, we'll be right back. And when we come back, we'll take your call. My guest is Richard C. Hoagland, and we are talking about things having to do with space and having to do with all of those artifacts that we've all seen photos of, located on Mars and the Moon.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
And I watch the news. It seems there's only pain and suffering, and there ain't nothing I can do. It's so senseless, I feel defenseless, so small. I could shut my windows, I could bolt my door, but if I don't feel safe enough to speak my mind anymore, then what's the use? I've nothing left to lose, no further to fall. So I'm gonna love, and I'm gonna believe. I'm gonna dream, and I'm gonna roll up my sleeves and give everything until there's nothing left to give. That's the only way I know how to live. It was a nightmare, no tongue can tell. The streets of New York City.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here, and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion. At Circuit City.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Richard C. Hoagland. And, Richard, we have a caller online. At least I hope so. I hope you stayed with us. Caller, your first name, and where are you calling from?
My name is Steve. I'm calling from the East Coast.
Okay, Steve.
I missed part of your program tonight. Because of your feed, I couldn't get your feed for some reason.
You know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at you. I'm just thinking that, you know, conspiracy theorists will have a field day with that one.
Well, I'm a computer engineer, so I always keep at least five computers ready for Kevin's show.
Well, that's outstanding. Did you have a question for Richard Hoagland?
Yes, I believe that what's going to happen is there's going to be another war as a distraction from what's going on, from disclosure, from the war we're presently in, and I believe it's going to be with China. I've heard reports that this is all pre-planned.
Well, I've heard obviously the same reports, and I'm looking at the, you know, daily stories on Iran, but what I'm noticing is that there's a lot more skepticism in the mainstream media. People are asking questions now they wouldn't even have thought of asking just a year ago. And they're really holding, you know, the elected people's feet to the fire. And I don't think it's going to be as easy as you might think. I mean, the other part of that equation has to do with, you know, a subject, Kevin, that we probably don't have time to adequately get into tonight, so I guess I'll have to come back, which is the whole hyperdimensional physics discussion.
Yes.
Because that is so overwhelmingly important in the context of why people seem to be waking up, what's going on with the weather, with the climate, why is the entire solar system apparently warming. I mean, it's so interesting to me to see after Al Gore won his Oscar, suddenly we have a whole other contingent saying, okay, yes, the Earth is warming, but so are all the other planets. It's not really SUVs and fossil fuels. And where were all those people all those years? You know, they were all telling us that we were all nuts to think the planet was changing climatologically. Well, 3 years ago, I wrote a series of papers with David Wilcock and put them on the Enterprise website talking about, you know, planetary warming going on all over the solar system, and now it seems to be the cat's meow. Everybody's talking about all the planets doing weird things and no one can explain it. And that comes back again to the idea there's this physics. Well, part of the prognostications of this model of a different physics, which is modulating our climate and our geology, is that it's also modulating consciousness. That we're actually, to hearken back now to the idea of the Mayans and the ancient calendar and the idea that something is coming as a nodal point in 2012, people seem to be getting sharper. They appear to be asking better questions. They appear to be not listening to authority figures as much as they used to, walking in lockstep, accepting everything they're told. And so, again, I think the people that are trying to tell us, oh, the planet's going to disintegrate in war, we're going to have, you know, this confrontation and that confrontation, and the terrorists are going to come and get us in our beds. Yeah, they're trying the old scare tactics, and the tactics are not working. And they're not working at many different levels, and it will take another year or two for everyone to see that those predictions are based on a control mechanism designed to keep us in fear, to keep us controlled, and to keep us from asking these other, much more important questions.
Well, it's all out there. It's on the Internet. And
see, that you just made an incredibly important statement. people say to me, well, how in the world can you claim there's ruins and stuff in the solar system and, you know, with all the big guys that would be hiding this have hidden it? They haven't hidden it. They've been incredibly dumb in hiding the fact that's been their objective. It's all out there. You just have to look. You have to know what you're looking at. I mean, Carl Sagan, who I worked with for many years when he was alive, and God rest his soul, he left us too soon, because it would have gotten really interesting to have these conversations with him now as things are getting really, really pointed. But Carl made a very important statement in one of his early books regarding how you recognize and know you're looking at an ancient civilization or even a contemporary civilization. And he was talking about Earth satellite imagery taken of the Earth. He said, if I can remember this quote, he said, the evidence of intelligent life on Earth first manifests itself in the geometric regularity of its constructions, which is another way of saying, as I've said from time to time, it's the geometry, stupid. Remember the old Bill Clinton mantra? Yeah, well, it's not the economy, it's the geometry. The only way that we can know, looking down on another planet with a camera, whether there was somebody home at one time, is by looking for repeating regular geometry. I mean, take a look at any satellite picture of the Earth, either day or night. What do you see? You see rectangles. You see streets at right angles. You see lights lined up for miles and miles and miles. You see buildings that are rectangles. You see squares. You see circles. You see repeating regular geometry. Now, flash forward the film a million years, and that geometry is going to all but go away because there'll be erosion. There'll be earthquakes. There'll be drifting sands. There'll be, on Earth, hurricanes and storms and vegetation and all kinds of things that blur the regular geometry that civilizations build, that humans build. But even in the middle of the jungle, what do archaeologists and explorers find when they find a new Mayan city? What's the first thing they look for? Geometry, stupid.
Yeah.
So when you go to another planet like Mars, or you go to the moon, you know, with Apollo or with the, you know, Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter up coming up in 2008, what you have to look for is geometry, geometry, geometry. Nature does not do geometry. It does it in tiny scales. It doesn't do it on the scale of miles. It doesn't do it on the scale of cities. That's why when I looked at those first images from MRO that were taken last March, it was easy for me to put up side-by-side comparisons on the Enterprise website. Again, do a search in Google, MRO, Enterprise, you know, cities on Mars. You'll come to the papers. They're not on the main page anymore. They're in the archives for 2006. And it was simple to do the comparisons because the cities on Mars look the same as the cities on Earth that are in ruin, that have been ruins in deserts drifted over by sands for thousands of years. Geometry, geometry, geometry. It's the geometry, stupid, and that's how anybody that has a brain can look at what we've got now, thousands upon thousands of pictures, and see overwhelming geometry in places where there should be no geometry if nobody once was home. The fact of the matter is everybody's waiting, you know, which they shouldn't, for the big authority figure in the sky to tell them there was an ancient civilization down there. It ain't going to happen that way. You're supposed to use your brain and figure it out and come to this conclusion yourself.
Steve, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Are you a first-time caller?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I sorry, I didn't recognize the voice. I usually recognize the voices of people who have called us before, but I appreciate the call. Excellent observations and comments. And call us again real soon, okay?
I might add something else.
Sure.
Because of the importance of your show, if you... we can't get a feed, there needs to be some way that you can let other people know that there's a problem with the feed tonight.
Well, when you can't get it, there are two other places right there on my website where you can click and get it.
Right, that's what I had to do, was another feed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have two other affiliate networks. And all you have to do, if for some reason the main player isn't working, then you just click on one of the others and you'll get it. All right.
Your information is the information of the century, actually.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We try.
Great show.
All right, Steve. Thank you. All right, 1-800-289-1092. That's toll-free throughout North America. Now, if you're outside of North America, you can still participate free of charge by sending me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. We got one from Australia that I thought was quite interesting. Richard, let me let me see if I can pull that up real quick. Here it is. Richard Hoagland for president.
Does he mean of Australia? Presuming it's a he.
No, it's a lady by the name of Leah. She says, Richard Hoagland for president. Love it. Many, many, many listeners through Ghost Radio Network. Well done.
You know, one of these days I've got to go to Australia and show people there up close and personal what I did at the LA Expo a few weeks ago, these images, because they're just stunning. Now, the advantage is, of course, I don't have to do that because we have the web. We have the Enterprise website. If you go to enterprisemission.com, you can see tons of imagery and comparisons and archaeological analyses and comparisons. I mean, for any thinking person, the overwhelming data is in. You don't need an authority figure to tell you what they've been keeping from you. What we now need to decide is, what are we going to do about it? Because the only thing that we have access to are the images. We don't have ground truth. We don't have the, you know, I don't know, frankly, Kevin, if we have a secret space program. There are times when I strongly suspect it, that NASA is, as I used to say, a false front Western town, and it's just a diversion. And the 16 or so billion a year that we're spending is basically throwaway so that mainstream people, curious people, don't ask, you know, well, why are we still working with rockets? Why is the president's vision to go back to the moon basically taking a giant step backwards to redo Apollo? Why did the NASA administrator, who, by the way, is a former CIA official, you knew that, right?
Yes.
Why is Mike Griffin saying this is basically Apollo on steroids? Now, how can you launch a solar system exploration and colonization program, you know, wagon trains west to the stars, that kind of thing, with rockets, with little Orion duplicates of the Apollo command module? I mean, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, we certainly, if we're going to get serious about getting out there into the solar system and beyond, we're going
to do it with rockets.
It's not going to be rockets. Let's go to the phone line quickly, okay, before we have a break. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
Yes, this is Jim.
Yes, Jim. Where are you calling from?
Yes, I'm Jim from San Diego.
Okay, Jim from San Diego. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Yes, Richard, I would like to know, is there any other governments or nations on the forefront that are exploring space at this time?
Well, yeah, there's the Japanese, there's the Indians, there's the Chinese, the Russians, I'm leaving people out. The Germans announced the other day that they're going to be sending spacecraft to the moon. Suddenly, everybody's going to the moon, which, of course, is why I think this administration announced 3 years ago that was going to the moon. It's interesting you should bring up other nations because, Kevin and Jim, the most remarkable, amazingly clear images of what's in Cydonia to date have not come out of NASA. They have come out of the German Space Agency through the ESA, the European Space Agency program to Mars called Mars Express, and they've been put out in the last few months by Dr. Gerard Newcomb, who is the head of the camera project on the Mars Express mission. And there is a website, which I don't have at my fingertips, but it's on Enterprise. You just have to go and look for it, which has all the German camera images taken of Mars, including some stunning high-res, like 58-megabyte images of Cydonia. And I sent to one of our geologists the other night a close-up of this incredible pyramid on Mars we call the D&M Pyramid, which I named many years ago after Pietro Molinar, who did the first work outside of NASA on the original Viking imagery. And all this story is in the Monuments of Mars, of course. Anyway, I sent Ron a close-up color version from Dr. Newcomb's camera, and you can see the girders, Kevin. even at the resolution of the Mars Express camera, which was 14 meters per pixel, you can see the girders of the D&M pyramid. You can see it's a construction. It's a huge, dilapidated building measuring about a mile on each side. Now, people might say, wait a minute, how could you have a building a mile on a side? Well, the Boeing plant where they build the 747s up in Everett, Washington, that building is several miles on each side. It doesn't stick up in the air very far, but it's a huge building covering an enormous volume of contained space to build 747s. Human beings under one Earth gravity with current technology can build buildings that are a mile in diameter. On Mars, with one-third the gravity and a much more incredible technology, you know, who knows what the limits are? And the point is that on Newcomb's photographs, coming not from NASA, but from the European Space Agency, that's what ESA stands for, European Space Agency, we're getting the best damn pictures of Mars we've ever had. And it's beginning to look now like the photos that Malin took with Mars Surveyor of Cydonia have been deliberately fuzzed and doctored, Kevin. Which gets back to how we opened the show, what happened to Mars Surveyor. I mean, in my quirkier moments, I said to one of my colleagues, it almost looks like in this internal war, one side is winning, and they basically took Mikey's spacecraft away because he's been a bad boy.
We have to take a break. Jim, thanks for calling, and I hope you'll call again.
I certainly will. Thank you.
You bet. All right, folks, we'll be back with more from Richard Hoagland. And we'll have time for one, maybe two quick calls. And as a matter of fact, there's a caller now. So, caller, if you will, just hang on. When the break is over, we'll get to you. All right, we'll be back in just a moment.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel foolish as a fool can be. Baby, I can't sleep at night. And I lost my appetite. But he don't know. It's getting bad, ain't funny no more. Tell me, baby, what I'm gonna do. I believe I'm in love with you. I believe I'm in love with you. Tell me, baby, that you love me too. I can't find it. Baby, I decided I'm in love with you.
Sure you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Where's Ralph? Come here, Ralph.
Okay, Ralph. I want you to mount the flat screen on this wall, and then I want you to put the speakers here and here and hook it up to our computer so we can play slideshows and music. Ready, Ralph? Install.
For home theater help, you don't need a dog. You need Fire Dog. Home theater installation, PC service, wireless, and more. Fire Dog, your digital home companion at Circuit City.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We We are back, and my guest is Richard C. Hoagland. We have a caller on the line, so let's go straight to the line. Caller, your first name, and where are you calling from?
Kevin, this is Dave. I'm calling from North Carolina.
Yes, Dave.
Hey, Mr. Hoagland, it's a pleasure and an honor to talk to you.
Hi, Dave.
It's a pleasure to meet you. I've talked to you, I've listened to you so many times on the radio. I wanted to ask you real quick, have you thought about, or does the 2012 thing play into any of the stuff that you've researched or that you're looking into? The main reason I'm asking is I was at work the other day, and my son, who he called me and said one of the girls that he worked with or whatever started talking to him about it, and he was like freaking out, thinking that the world was going to end or something or whatever. And I was just wondering if any of your research has, come up with any of the stuff that people are talking about with what's supposed to happen in 2012 or anything like that.
Well, we don't have time tonight. We only got, 10 minutes left in the show,
yeah.
Kevin?
Mm-hmm.
We need to do a whole show on the physics of 2012 because as a almost a side effect of looking at these ruins and figuring out the math and, remember, it's the geometry, we have tripped over an extraordinary physics. It's called hyperdimensional physics. I'm working on this in parallel with the effort to, get the ruins taken seriously for at least the last 25 years. And the essence of any good science is prediction. Can you make observations, and then can you predict what will happen next based on those observations and a commensurate theory? Well, the answer is we have and we can. And we have got some field data. We've got some predictions. We've got a model. And we just don't have the time tonight to go into all of this. But yes, there appears to be some real reason for why the Mayans were so fixated on this end date of their calendar of 2012, the 13th Bakhtun cycle, which begins again on December 21, 2012, coming up, in a little over 5 years now. And that would make a very interesting show, Kevin, and I look forward to...
Kevin, we got another show.
When you
absolutely.
We can do that.
Okay, absolutely. I look forward to it.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Hey, it's my pleasure that you're listening.
Take care.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you something, Richard. He doesn't call a whole lot, but when we first began taking live calls on this show, he was one of the, not the first, but he was one of the first.
Hmm.
The physics of 2012, I've read what's on your website about the hyperdimensional physics. And at first, it was a little bit hard for me to get my mind around that. But as you move from planet to planet and you show different things that are at, for instance, 19.5 degrees.
Yes.
It is absolutely astounding. Because it's virtually every planet, there is something anomalous.
And it's predictably anomalous. In other words, it's only anomalous if you go by textbooks and mainstream physics. And again, that goes back to how can we be in the early years of the 21st century and basically be dealing with the wrong physics? Well, the answer is that our physics has been as suppressed as everything else. It's becoming very obvious, Kevin, that we live on a planet where information is the most important product, and those that have information control those that don't. And the great equalizer, to quote Bucky Fuller, seems to be the Internet. The information is out there. You just have to forget about authority figures, forget about people that tell you the truth, and you have to do it yourself. We have this extraordinary tool to use, where we can connect people all over the planet. Your email from Australia a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have this ability. I used to talk with specialists at Brown University about when we would have a computerized library. And I remember every couple of years I would talk to this one friend of mine who got a graduate degree from Brown and information science. And I'd say, okay, Bruce, when are we going to have a computerized library? And one day I woke up and here was the Internet. And it's only gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And fortunately, the Enterprise website was one of the early websites. So we have a historical presence almost from the beginnings of the World Wide Web, the net, and we have extraordinary traffic, and we have tons of people who are doing what I'm saying tonight that people have to do. Forget waiting for authority figures to tell you what's out there. They aren't going
to
do it.
Yeah, you have to go search it out.
You have to do it yourself. You have to figure it out. You have to cross-correlate the data. You have to do your homework. You have to think. But the data is there. It's not KGB versus CIA, where one group tries to hide it all from the other group. That's not this war we're in. Kevin, this almost is more of a metaphysical war for the hearts and minds and souls of free people, where people voluntarily give their freedom away or have it tricked away from them. It's not taken away, they give it away.
Yeah.
We give our power away every time we wait for somebody with a badge or somebody with a title or somebody with an office to tell us this is the truth.
Let's take a very quick call because we only have about 3 minutes left. So, caller, you'll have to make it very quick. First name and where are you calling from?
Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, well,
you're it.
Yes, very quickly. Yeah, my name is Mark from Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And
God, you have a diverse audience, Kevin.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, I'd like to quickly get both of your opinions about the History Channel and all of these UFO documentaries that they have on the History Channel. Is that something you think we need to be suspect about?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, Mark, we're going to let Richard answer, and okay. Thank you for the call. Next time, call us sooner, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Mark, have you ever noticed that these shows all follow the same pattern? They start out all breathless. Oh, there's this mystery, and there's this landing, and there's this. And by the time they wind up, they brought out the most trivial, stupid explanation, trotted it out there for you to buy. It's the old bait and switch. None of these programs are really interested in finding out the truth. I'll give you one critical example. When was the last time you saw me on one of those programs discussing the ruins on NASA photographs that you paid for of an extraordinary civilization in the solar system? They will not touch us, even though we have the best science, the best documentation, the best sourcing, the best imagery. They will not touch us because their game is not to tell you the truth. It's to keep playing the game. Get off playing the game. Go to Enterprise, look at the photographs, go to the NASA websites we're listing, download these pictures, start doing your own homework, and you will find out the truth yourself, and it won't be TLC or History or Discovery or National Geographic that tells it to you. It will be your own thinking process.
And that's at www.enterprisemission.com.
Yep.
And, you know, every time I go over there, which is frequently, I find something new. So it may not be new, but it's new to me. It's something I had not yet read.
We're about to publish a part four of our interplanetary climate series that we started 3 years ago when Art and David and I did the show first. And we're about to bring all these threads together of the mainstream now seeing global warming occurring all over the solar system and saying, how can this be? How can this be? Well, the answer, of course, is the hyperdimensional physics. That explains exactly how it can be and what it's going to be and how it relates to this important date of 2012. And I'll wait until you have some time, and then I'll be glad to come back and talk about that.
Outstanding. And if you will, just hang on the phone with me for a little bit as I close the show. I'd like to talk with you for just a minute or two.
By all means.
All right.
It's been a pleasure, Kevin.
And it's been a pleasure here as well. I really appreciate you coming on tonight. It's been great for me, and I know it has been for our audience. Okay, folks, Richard Hoagland, and we will be having him back to talk about the hyperdimensional physics. And if you haven't been to his website to read what he's written about that, you really need to do that because you will enjoy that show so much more if you have read this very detailed article about hyperdimensional physics, and it's in several parts. All right, folks, you know what we do, and we do it every night. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow night, when my guest is Joe Montaldo. So long, everybody.